The Centers for Disease Control says we all need to wear masks when we go outside. So, where do you get one? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, an answer to that question and a closer look at the brand new effort, Masks for Jacks. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, how to help Florida's farmers and in turn our food supply chain during the COVID crisis. But first this hour, here are the latest numbers for you. Statewide, there are now 14,747 cases of coronavirus. That is an 11% increase over the last 24 hours. 296 deaths have been reported around the state. In Northeast Florida, there are 825 positive cases and three new deaths reported Tuesday, one each in Duval, Clay, and Baker counties. Mayor Lenny Curry said yesterday that Duval County beaches will remain closed, despite calls from some to reopen them. He's also considering a potential curfew for the city to slow the spread of the virus. Meanwhile, the Centers for Disease Control is now recommending that we all wear a cloth face mask whenever we go anywhere outside our homes. That has people trying to figure out where to get a mask or maybe how they can make their own. To answer this, a new grassroots movement has launched in Jacksonville to spread awareness about masks, and it's called Masks for Jacks. The goal is to make these masks widely available to anyone in the city who wants one. They're going to begin by distributing 30,000 cloth masks today to locally owned restaurants around town. And that's just the beginning of this effort. Right now, we're pleased to welcome Dr. Samuel Oza, Chief of Cardiology at Ascension's St. Vincent's Riverside. Dr. Oza, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. And also on the line, Jonathan Insetta, owner of several participating restaurants in Masks for Jacks. Hi, John.
Hi, Melissa. Good morning.
Already getting calls about this. How curious are you about this, everybody, and do you want a mask? You need to be getting one. So call us up right now with your questions at 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJacks. And our Facebook page is open, too. Okay, Dr. Oza, tell us about Masks for Jacks. How did this all begin?
So this began, I was doing some research on other countries around the world and how they dealt with the COVID-19 crisis. And what I found is there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that countries that wore masks all the time, especially during flu season and pandemics like this, did much better during the COVID crisis in their countries than countries that didn't wear masks. And the reason for this is simple. When you wear a mask, you prevent the spread of virus to others. The mask actually provides a physical barrier so that when you cough, when you sneeze, when you're talking, the droplets which contain the virus particles don't spread to other people and other surfaces.
Right. And so if I wear a mask, that protects you. If you wear one, that protects me, because you could be carrying the virus but not have any real symptoms. So your goal is to get 30,000 masks in the first wave out to the public because you expect a big surge of cases in the next few weeks at area hospitals, correct?
Exactly. We have a huge sense of urgency right now because we're right now in that slow rise phase where we're seeing a few cases in the hospital, 13, 14, 15 cases in the local hospitals. But if any other city is a guide, this is set to really ramp up in the next few weeks, and we want to get as many masks out as possible before then. So our time is very limited, and we're trying to do the best we can to get masks out to everybody. So in the first wave, we're going to have actually about 35,000 masks delivered to local restaurants. Right now, we're starting with just a few, about 20 restaurants, just to get our workflow down and make sure that everything runs smoothly. Then we'll open it up to other restaurants around the city again and deliver the rest of the masks. We're also, you mentioned the first wave. Our second wave is going to be in partnership with the city of Jacksonville. The Jacksonville Jaguars, Channel 4, has also been a key in helping get the information out. And we want to partner with Meals on Wheels, the lunch delivery program for schools, and homeless shelters to even larger number of masks. We're hoping to distribute about 350,000 masks in the next 2 weeks around Jacksonville.
That is fantastic. Now, everyone needs to go to the website masksforjax.com. Masks, the number four, jax.com. John Insetta, this first wave of mass distribution is going to happen through a couple dozen local restaurants, including some of your restaurants. One of my favorites that you run is Bellwether in downtown Jax. So this is brilliant because if people come and get takeout from a restaurant, they're given masks with their takeout order. So you're supporting local businesses in need and you're getting the masks. So how can people, starting today, take advantage of this opportunity?
So we'll be doing the mask program. And first, I want to thank Dr. Orza for his proactive approach in this. Masks are something we've tried to get ourselves and had a lot of trouble getting in the past 2 weeks. We want to get them for our employees. And I can't thank him enough for his proactive approach and all the work he's done. As far as getting the masks, we'll be doing it at Black Sheep and Orsay for any takeout. So when a customer orders takeout, they'll be getting two per customer in a bag. And so we'll be able to give two per customer when they place the order. At Bellwether, we're not serving the public. We're working with Feeding Northeast Florida on a work charity program that feeds the elderly right now. So the two locations that they'll be able to get it is Black Sheep and Restaurant Jose.
Okay. And there's a list of participating restaurants at masksforjax.com. And you can just look through that. And beginning today, you can order food and then pick up your masks. Dr. Orza, we need to talk about the difference between a cloth mask and a surgical or N95 mask. Can you explain that a little bit to listeners and what kind of mask people will be getting when they take part in this?
Absolutely. The last thing we want to do is deplete the medical supply of masks. So cloth masks, N95 masks, those really need to be reserved for healthcare providers. N95 mask is like that top-tier mask that blocks about 95% of particles that would be carrying the virus. Usually at 0.3 microns is the number that we talk about. That's really reserved for places that have aerosolized particles, like when you intubate somebody, when you perform procedures on people, surgical procedures, those generate that sort of aerosol that doctors and healthcare providers need to be protected from. And those are done in negative pressure rooms in very, very confined circumstances. So those masks really do need to be reserved for those people. So if you buy those masks, if you get them off the street, you're actually doing a disservice to yourself, because if physicians and healthcare providers get ill, there's nobody that's going to be there to take care of you. Surgical masks are the next level down, where that also provides good protection for the person wearing the mask. They need to be reserved for general use in the hospital, where there's many COVID patients around in the hallways, and you have a high likelihood of transmission. The masks we're talking about are cloth masks. These really are just a functional barrier that prevents, like I said, your any germs you may have from getting out to other surfaces, such as the cereal box you didn't take at the grocery store, or when you cough, or when you speak to somebody, or if somebody does get within that 6-foot radius of you and comes a little closer than they need to, it'll prevent the spread of your germs to the other person. So if you are one of those 25% of asymptomatic carriers of COVID-19, then it may prevent other people who are more at risk from getting sick if you wear a mask. And this has just been borne out in many studies of people wearing masks universally around countries.
Yeah. If everyone wears the masks, we can crush this curve much more quickly than if we don't have universal compliance. And John Insetta will continue explaining to people how they can get their masks and support restaurants. What's it been like for you in this crisis as a restaurateur, as you convert to a takeout-only, delivery-only model?
It's been incredibly tough, but you know, we were proactive about it, and we have great community support, which we're really blessed to have. You know, our sales are down, I would say, depending on the day of the week. You know, we're busy on the weekends, but for takeout, our sales are down 65 to 90%, depending on the day of the week and the restaurant. We're seeing a trend coming up because there's obviously risks associated with any way of getting food these days. But takeout and delivery seem to be a lower risk situation. So
yeah.
we do see us trending up, you know, and we've made huge efforts early on to make sure that we upped our sanitation game, that we got everything to where, you know, a little over the top, I would say, to make sure that it's as safe as possible for the guests. One of the major critical issues we were having and a critical control point was the masks, and we weren't able to get the masks. And not just for, I can imagine how that is for our guests who are trying to get masks now. Now that's becoming the new normal. As you know, it's day to day what the new normal is. And I've been trying for about 2 weeks, and this has been a huge blessing that Dr. Oza and everyone who's behind this has been able to do this, not only for our guests, but for employees. It's pretty outstanding.
It really is. It's a brilliant idea. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about the new effort, Masks for Jack's. Beginning today, doctors and restaurant owners are working together to distribute 30,000 masks. What you need to do is go to the website masksforjacks.com. There are 22 participating restaurants. All you have to do to get two free face masks, these are cloth masks, is place a takeout order at one of these restaurants. And you get a couple of masks with their order, with your order. Now, this is going to expand in the coming days as they try to distribute 350,000 masks. They're going to work with the City of Jacksonville, the Duval County Public Schools Lunch Program, Meals on Wheels, and homeless shelters to get more masks out to more of you. Let's go to a few calls. What are your thoughts about Masks for Jack's? It's 549-2937 to join us. James is on the north side. Hi, James. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Miss Melissa?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Okay. I have a concern that I want to just, you know, let the listeners know. I mean, I hear they talk about, you know, doctors on the front line, nurses on the front line, but I work in an occupation where people don't think about us until we don't show up, mm-hmm. and that's your garbage people. I mean,
right now
I haven't heard of anybody coming down with it, but the garbage industry is a very close-knit organization, and we pick up garbage from everybody. You notice that if we miss one day of not picking somebody garbage, if you'll call in, imagine if the garbage guys start going down and you're missing weeks and months and stuff like that. And I think this will exacerbate the situation, but I don't ever hear anybody speak about, you know, what we're out here doing. We're trying to get rid of this stuff as quick as we can, and the environments that we go in to pick it up, the environments that we drop it off to pick it up, and we haven't been issued any type of protective gear or anything. We're
wow.
just out here doing our job, and, you know, until we're trying to get it done, trying to keep people's lives as normal can get, but I haven't heard anybody, you know, really kind of say, hey, guys, we appreciate you, and you know, maybe we should get these guys some protective gear too, but we get none of that. So,
yeah, James, yeah, I feel like, sure, James, I feel like you should be wearing gloves on a normal day, for, you know, to protect yourself. Forget about this situation and a mask, because you're handling a lot of garbage that could get you sick. So Dr. Oza, that's one category of worker that we just heard from, James on the north side, who he's putting himself at risk just doing his job without PPE. He could definitely use a mask.
James, so first of all, this is Dr. Rosa. I applaud you for what you guys do. Thank you so much. Our city wouldn't function without you guys. So, you know, I think that's the first message. In terms of contact, this is a virus that can spread by two ways. One is by contact with your hands, and then if those hands touch your mouth, your eyes, your nose, touching your face, that's one way of spreading the virus. The other way is by person-to-person contact, so respiratory droplets. So if you cough on somebody else, if you sneeze on somebody else, if you talk too closely to somebody, if you're in a room with somebody with the virus for too long, that's another way that you can develop the virus, that you can catch the virus. For your industry in particular, I believe gloves would probably be the main thing that would protect you from the virus. Unless you're working in close contact with other people, a mask isn't necessarily needed in routine work. Now, the fact that you're leaving your house and going to places around the city, I think a cloth mask is definitely something that you guys should wear. One, if it's not just because it would protect you, but it would actually send the message out that people are wearing masks. I think everybody when they leave their house should wear a mask just to make the message clear that we all need to be wearing masks. So I absolutely think that you guys should be wearing cloth masks. I don't think, though, necessarily it's because it will protect airborne virus from going in your respiratory tract, in your nose, or through your mouth. It's really to prevent you from touching your face, reminding you that, there is a possibility that the garbage that you're handling is contaminated. So I think that's very important. There's several industries that we're working with. So, for example, the Northeast Florida Builders Association, we've been in close contact with them. We want all construction workers to wear these cloth masks because they do sometimes work in closer proximity to each other, and they are very visible. So if people see these people, these construction workers on the side of the road or building at a building or a house, and see them all wearing masks, maybe they'll think twice about themselves not wearing a mask. So we really want to make it a normal thing in the culture for everybody to wear masks. So yeah. I absolutely think the sanitation workers in the city do need to be wearing cloth masks. And if you have somebody in your leadership, contact us over Facebook or through Melissa Ross. I would be happy to speak to them and try to get you all some cloth masks through our production. One of the challenges we've had is finding the production. As you heard Mr. Enceta say, it's just very hard to find masks. Luckily, I found a local manufacturer who is actually sending his masks one by one out to other states, other people, just selling them retail.
Who's this? Who's your supplier?
Well, I don't want to say it right now because and I'll tell you why, is because I got them to stop sending to everybody else, and I said, listen, I want to keep all these masks in Jacksonville, and we'll take your whole supply, and in the next 2 weeks, they're going to be able to make 350,000 masks for the city of Jacksonville because of that. I don't want to release his name right now because they don't want to be inundated with phone calls from other businesses trying to get masks for themselves. I want to get them to make these generic masks that essentially don't need screen printing as fast as possible so we can get these masks out in the next 2 weeks. Like I said, there's a lot of urgency about our mission here right now.
Yeah.
My goal is to stop the spread as soon as possible so we don't have a huge surge that could potentially overwhelm the Jacksonville's hospitals. If only 1% of the population, which is approximately what they feel that COVID-19 can do, if only 1% of the population of Jacksonville gets infected and needs hospitalization, that would by far, on a logarithmic scale, overwhelm the hospitals in Jacksonville. So we really need to stop the spread. We need to make sure that we blunt the curve, we flatten that curve so that it doesn't exceed our capacity. So that's why it's urgent right now to get these 350,000 masks out to everybody. Also encourage people to make their own masks because there's more than 350,000.
And we're getting questions about that. Let me get a few more callers on for you. It's 549-2937. Catherine is in Mandarin. Hi, Catherine. Have you been trying to make your own mask?
Yes, I'm making my masks for my colleagues at work. We work in the healthcare industry at an eye doctor's office, and I'm making my masks for my coworkers, and I've added a layer of polypropylene to the masks, and I just wanted to know if that is an extra layer of protection. Is it true, or am I wasting my time and resources by putting the extra layer of polypropylene in it? It's a non-woven fabric. It's kind of like those bags that you get at the grocery store that are, the cloth bags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't know if that was a waste. Like, it's an extra barrier. And
extra barrier, yeah. Let's ask Dr. Oza. Thank you, Catherine. Dr. Oza, what about the homemade masks that have an extra layer of protection? I've also heard people are using pieces of a vacuum cleaner bag or pieces of a coffee filter. Catherine said she's using polypropylene. What about that?
Yeah. I think those are all good things to use. Anything that can improve the filtration of the mask. The thing that we worry about, though, is with, for example, air conditioning filters. Some people are putting them directly on their face, and we worry about people inhaling the fibers and causing other respiratory problems. So you want to make sure anything you do, you put it between two pieces of cloth. Cotton cloth generally works best, and also you have to make sure it's breathable. So you can filter, you know, everything out of the air. If you filter the air itself, then you're not going to be able to breathe. So you have to make sure that it's breathable and that you can wear it all the time. If, for example, an N95 mask, it gets quite hot. So even the masks that are meant to be worn all the time do get quite uncomfortable. So you have to make sure that you're okay wearing it all the time. I'd much rather somebody wear a cotton mask all the time when they're out rather than a more efficient filtration mask, but they're uncomfortable and not able to wear it all
okay.
the time.
Okay. So, and let me just stick you back on hold for a minute. Lots of callers. I just want to get as many on as we can. Rodney on the West Side. Hi, Rodney. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I wear a mask anytime I go into a public place, a grocery store, whatever. And then when I get back out to my car, I put it on the dashboard of my van, hoping that the UV rays from the sun will help disinfect it. Is that effective at all?
Does that work? Okay. I think the answer is no. Dr. Oza, can you answer that question? We need to wash them, not just disinfect them in the sunlight, right?
Correct. Yeah, I really recommend that people do wash their masks daily if they're wearing them every day. It does make some sense to put it in the dashboard because you do get sun, but that's not always going to be the case. There's days that aren't as sunny. Depends on what time you put it in there. It may not get hot enough in there to actually disinfect it. The best way is really to use. To use soap and water, maybe add a little vinegar. We have on our website, instructional videos about the proper care of masks and how to clean them.
Yes. So to answer your question, Rodney, just throw it in some soapy water, maybe dash in a little vinegar, rinse it out, and let it dry, and then it's good to go the next day. We have so many calls, emails, tweets. Let's get on another caller. It's Bruce in St. Augustine. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I appreciate your taking my call. I just wanted to thank the sanitation worker who called in earlier and all of his coworkers. I have long felt that the three most important groups of people in the world are the people who do the agricultural work, the farm workers, and the people who take away our garbage and the people who bring us clean water. You know, as a society, we tend to lionize doctors and artists, like actors, et cetera, and we give lip service to teachers. But for our society to truly function, we need clean water, clean food, and to have the garbage taken away. So I would just like to express my appreciation for those groups of people.
I think you're absolutely right, Bruce. It's really late. This crisis has laid bare just who is essential in this society and who we really need doing their jobs every day. You know, John and Seta, I wanted to also ask you about, in addition to the effort you're doing with Masks for Jacks to distribute these masks at restaurants, you've also partnered up with Feeding Northeast Florida to help vulnerable people getting food to them. Can you touch on that quickly too?
Absolutely. You know, I right about March 14th or 15th, I was trying to figure out how we survive as a business. You know, why, and had a lot of fear and just trying to figure out how we can be a positive force in this moment of fear and chaos. You know, and trying to think about how we can be a positive force for change in our community as well. So I reached out to a couple charities, and Feeding Northeast Florida being the one that I really wanted to connect with, because I felt there was some synergy there. And I basically offered our services as a kitchen to see if there's any answer there. And Susan King came up with the idea, because they've been trying to get prepared foods for their client base for a long time, is that they would supply the logistics, the dropping off of the raw product. We would prepare that product into ready-made meals, you know, starch, veg, protein. And then they would then pick it up and bring and deliver their clientele base. And so what that's done is twofold. It's helped our employee base. You know, right now we have about 12 employees. We'll be up to about 20-something of employees that were laid off that will be able to have work. We've been supplying 1,800 meals a week so far to elderly, and I'm sure that client base is going to change and grow as this goes on longer. So it's really rare, and it's really, really have twofold. That, and the same with Masks for Jacks. It helps our restaurants with promotion. It helps the community with safety.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know, with the meeting,
let me just jump in and say, since we're running tight on time, we have people emailing us. There's an email from Judy saying, I went to maskforjax.com and tried to make a foundation, but it takes me to the Community Foundation website. So Judy, just so you understand, yes, if anyone out there wants to donate to Masks for Jax, the Community Foundation is accepting donations through a special projects fund. You need to go to the link that you're taken to donate, or you can call the Community Foundation if you want to donate. Dr. Oza, let me quickly close by asking you, people can go to Masks for Jax, that's the number 4, jax.com, starting today, order takeout at participating restaurants and get their masks with their order. But beyond that, as the effort spreads beyond that, how can more people access the masks?
So, like I said, we're going to be working with the city to have other avenues of distribution. So that's going to be an ever-changing thing. This is a very new movement, so we're just kind of seeing what works, what gets the masks out to the most people, and we'll go with it. So any ideas people have, you know, organizations like sanitation workers, if we can distribute through them to their employees, I think that's going to be great. We were working, like I said, with Northeast Florida Builders Association to get, they have about 20,000 people that work under their auspices, so we can distribute to them. So we're looking for more ideas. If you click on our Donate Now page, it goes to the Florida Fund, which set up a donation area for us. All you have to say is in fund description required. If you scroll down, you'll see that it just says Masks for Jax, and it'll be diverted to our account, and then we'll use that to help buy these 350,000 masks that we've committed to through for the next 2 weeks.
All right, it's masks4jax.com, masks, the number 4jax.com, and he is Dr. Samuel Oza, Chief of Cardiology at Ascension St. Vincent's Riverside. We were also joined by restaurateur Jonathan Insetta. Guys, thanks for this amazing effort, and thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Melissa.
Up next, why small business owners can access the loans they need desperately right now, authorized by the federal government. We'll be right back.
Mark's Gray, dedicated to helping Florida's businesses manage their complex legal issues for more than 120 years. Mark's Gray is proud to support WJCT and public broadcasting. Learn more at marksgray.com. Offices in Jacksonville.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Welcome back. Well, by now, just about every small business is aware that the new CARES Act, signed into law on March 27th, has a provision called the Paycheck Protection Program. It's a $349 billion loan program providing financial assistance to small businesses of up to 500 employees. Of course, many are under stress because of the COVID pandemic and the shutdown measures needed to fight the spread of the virus. This program's purpose is to reduce the growth of unemployment, help businesses retain their workers, and give them a hand in rebounding quickly after the pandemic is under control. Some loans have even been billed as forgivable, meaning you wouldn't have to repay the money. But there's just one problem. Business owners almost universally are saying that they have not been able, at least not yet, to access these funds. I spoke about this problem with business attorney Houston Barnes. Houston Barnes, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, both with the City of Jacksonville partnering up with Vistar Credit Union on a small business loan program for local businesses, and then also national efforts to help small businesses with loans, We're hearing a lot about this. Obviously, people need relief right away, but there are a lot of things business owners need to be aware of. You are an expert in this area. So what's the first thing you advise a business owner to do right now if they're looking to apply for a loan?
So right now, what I'm asking all my clients to do is to contact the bank that they have a current banking relationship with. So the program that we're hearing a lot about right now is the Paycheck Protection Program, which is a loan whereby the SBA is guaranteeing loans by banks that are made to small businesses, where if you use those loan funds to pay 2 months worth of payroll and other expenses, that money will be forgiven. So in essence, what this program does is it is a grant to small businesses, mm-hmm. whereby those businesses will receive 2 months worth of payroll expenses paid for by the federal government. Since this program was announced, it launched on Friday. Today is now Tuesday. I work with hundreds of clients, and I have yet to have a single client actually be able to apply for the loan. We have everything from the large banks like Bank of America has gotten the most media coverage for closing the applications. There is no way to apply through them if you have a checking account. And so then as you look at, well, that bank is closed, can we go to other banks? Because of the way that this program is currently being administered by the SBA, I do not know of any SBA lender right now who is taking new clients.
Wow.
So right now, small businesses are in a tough spot. I've spoken with some of our congressional leaders as recently as about an hour ago, and there is going to be future bills passed. The SBA is working on this, so I have hope that they're going to come up with a model of how to actually get the money into the hands of the businesses that need it. But right now, there really is not a path that I know of for small businesses to actually receive these loans.
That's so incredibly frustrating. And what needs to be done, do you think, to unstick this whole process?
So when I talked, I spoke yesterday with the head of a credit union here in Florida, and they flat out told me that given the guidance that the SBA has provided, they do not have faith that the SBA will fully back this loan and protect their clients, so they're not able to offer it. In talking to other SBA lenders, the margins are so small on this, the guidance is so restrictive that there is a risk and liquidity issue because the banks are being asked to put up the money, the banks are taking the risk, and at the end of the day, we don't know how this whole thing is going to play out. What the SBA needs to do is the SBA needs to stand up and needs to give clear guidelines to the bank and put in a program that makes it so banks feel comfortable lending to these small businesses and actually instituting this program.
From everything you're saying, it's not inspiring a lot of confidence, honestly, that these businesses will ever be able to get the relief they need, at least quickly enough, that they can stay afloat.
Yeah, you know, I have clients who are sole proprietors, single members who have very small businesses. I have clients who have hundreds of employees around the globe, and they are all telling me the same thing, which is they need this money to stay afloat. They are seeing online tweets from this administration saying, we're lending out the money is available, and they're panicking because they can't get to it. And there is not a banker, CPA, or lawyer that I know right now who is able to do anything to help these companies out. And it's really a desperate time for a lot of companies.
Any other advice you have for people? I know it's not an encouraging picture right now, but what other information can you share?
The SBA and the Treasury on their website, they keep updating information. The Treasury updated about an hour ago. My advice is wherever you have a business checking account, wherever you are doing your business banking, be in touch with them. Even if it's multiple times a day, this is changing by the hour. I do believe that there will be relief and that they will find a way to work through this. But the best thing we can do right now is just to stay on top of it, to keep working with the banks, and hopefully when relief is available, there'll be a pathway to receive it.
Oh, man, do we all hope that. Well, Houston Barnes, thank you so much for sharing this with us. So many people need this information right now. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you for your time.
Well, restaurants are not the only places in the food and beverage world having a tough time right now. Many farmers are, too, especially those that rely on restaurants to purchase their crops. Lauren Titus is the editor of Edible Northeast Florida. She's on the line to tell us about some of the changes local farms are implementing to protect our critical food supply chain. Hi, Lauren.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to have you. What is happening to the crops that restaurants are no longer able to purchase? Not only that, farmers markets have closed. So what's happening to all the produce?
Well, this pandemic has caused local farmers and farmers in general a real opportunity to pivot and shift the way that they operate. Fortunately for a lot of them, the smaller local farms, they've been able to do that, not without pain, certainly, but they've been able to adapt to the daily changing circumstances. And while their business with local restaurants has certainly declined considerably, fortunately, a lot of the local farms have been able to shift to home deliveries and also some centralized drop-off locations partnering with other businesses. For instance, Down to Earth Farm is partnering with Community Loaves in Murray Hill to set up a drop-off point on Saturday mornings. But all of the farms are doing pre-ordering. So that has required them to quickly ramp up an online ordering system, which, you know, technology is not necessarily in the wheelhouse for farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So that this pandemic has caused them to quickly adapt online and also how they distribute their products.
You can learn more about this at ediblenortheastflorida.com or pick up the magazine around town. So how might this affect our supply chain over time, this situation we're in?
Yeah, it's funny. It took a pandemic for us to realize the importance of a local food system. You know, with larger farms like South Florida, Central Florida, where the focus had been on commercial accounts, restaurants, schools, universities, we're seeing a lot of crops actually being destroyed because the distribution is just not there. It's harder for the local, for the larger farms to pivot and adapt to distribution, though a lot of them are starting to work with Sysco and some of the food distribution companies to get the food to grocery stores instead. But with the local farms, you know, we're seeing that they're able to do the online ordering and distribute, for instance, farm boxes like at Brew and some other places. They're partnering with farms that will deliver a pre-built farm box with fresh local produce that can be ordered along with your latte, for instance.
Is the government, that's good, that's good.
Go ahead.
But is the government going to provide any kind of relief to agriculture here?
Well, that's the huge challenge right now because the CARES Act really did not address the smaller farms, small and mid-range farms, and that's a serious shortcoming in the legislation that's been passed recently. There have been some makeshift funds. American Farmland Trust, for instance, is providing grants to smaller farms, but it's not going to be nearly enough. And something I saw recently, in fact, I think one of your previous callers mentioned it, what happens if the 1.5 million farm workers get sick? You know, that's our part of a critical part of our supply chain in getting food to grocery stores. So,
we're already seeing disruptions in that supply chain.
Absolutely, absolutely. The thing is, we have plenty of food. You know, it's not a shortage of the food. It's a inability to shift that distribution and get it where it's needed. In fact, locally, this is the height of our growing season, and it's a real shame that the farmers markets are closed, because this is when we see so many different fruits and vegetables, broccoli and cauliflower and beets and turnips. Everything is available right now in Northeast Florida, and it's just a challenge getting to it, really.
Getting it. So Edible Northeast Florida magazine, Edible, is trying to be that crucial hinge point. You have all kinds of information on your website for people so that they can access all of this food, right?
Yes, we have a couple of different resource pages, one pertaining to the farm specifically, because, like I say, the seasonal produce is the star right now. We're highlighting a lot of the local farms and what's available for home delivery. Like I said, a lot of the farms are quickly shifting to being able to deliver at home, centralized drop-off points. I do want to emphasize that each farm and each drop-off location, they're following all of the guidelines about social distancing and cleanliness and everything. So, you know, if you feel comfortable enough going to the grocery store, you should feel more than comfortable picking up from one of these centralized locations to get fresh local produce.
Yeah.
Terry
is tweeting the show. I started using Local Fair Jacks for fresh produce. They deliver. Local Fair Jacks. I wanted to give them a quick plug. Go ahead, Lauren.
Local Fair Jacks and also Front Porch Pickings. They both source as much as they can from local farms, which is really great. And each of them have been providing the service for several years now before this crisis started. And they also you can add on other products such as bread and cheese and dairy and eggs. So you can really get a full grocery bag in your delivery each week. So we really recommend those kinds of services. And like I say, the resource page that we have indicates the local farms and who's doing delivery, who's doing a drop-off, and so on. And there are also Dig Local and Olive My Pickle. They're also doing pop-up farmers markets. And again, they are following the strict guidelines of sanitation and social distancing. But Dig Local is out at the beach, and they've got the Atlantic Beach City Hall location for Wednesdays and Saturdays now. And there are several different farmers markets vendors who set up there, including farms and dairy and other products. And Olive My Pickle has their warehouse. They've started the 904 Food Hub.
Yes, where,
again,
and that's another
local farmers.
Yeah, that's another huge effort. And I want to just direct everyone to your magazine one more time before we go to break. EdibleNortheastFlorida.com for resources on all of this. And she is editor Lauren Titus. Thank you so much, Lauren, for being with us and sharing this vital information about our food supply.
You're welcome, Melissa, and thank you very much.
Thank you. A quick break, and up next, how to keep your kids occupied, your job flowing at home, and your sanity intact while you work and school from home. We'll speak with one local mom and CEO after this.
As the coronavirus pandemic has made staying home the safe bet, the online meeting platform Zoom has experienced massive growth, but found that its selling point, ease of use, was also its Achilles heel. Now, says CEO Eric Yuan,
we want to do all we can to focus on privacy and security, and even at the cost of multiple clicks.
Rethinking Zoom this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The world's reporters and producers have a singular mission to put you in touch with events around the globe that affect life here in the U.S. From the coronavirus to global trade to efforts to dial back climate change, each day we bring you fresh insights, unique voices, one-of-a-kind reporting. Join us for an hour that takes you around the globe. It's right here. It's the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, Stephen King talks about living in a world that feels like a Stephen King novel. His book, The Stand, published decades ago, was about a viral pandemic. King's new book, If It Bleeds, is a collection of stories. The main character of the title story is Holly Gibney, who appeared in several King novels, including The Outsider, adapted into a recent HBO series. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
In these uncertain times, can you feel good if you know you don't look good? The salons are shut. The sign on the barber's door says closed. And doing it yourself is really only for the brave. It's not a top pandemic priority, but without a professional to turn to, how do you care for your hair? Hair do's and don'ts, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, if you're having a tough time working at home while also homeschooling your kids and then maybe being around your partner 24/7, guess what? You are not alone. We are all living that right now, and we're going to take a look at how one local family is coping. Emily McCarthy is on the line. She's chief of staff at GoRuck, a First Coast company providing gear and performance apparel. Hey, Emily.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? How are you working from home and handling the kids right now and your husband?
Well, it's been something we've been doing we're on week five now.
Week five. Oh, you started early.
We started early due to back-to-back spring breaks, and we didn't have any childcare, so we thought we're just going to stagger our schedules. You know, he was going to wake up early, come home, or, you know, be available around noon. And then I would take sort of the evening shift, and we've been doing it ever since.
Okay, so you're a company, GoRuck, that is all about outdoor activity. You sell all this performance gear and stuff, and it's tough right now to do a lot of those activities. So you have some ideas for activities you can do with the kids to stay active. What are you doing?
Right, absolutely. We've had to pivot our business, like a lot of other businesses out there, to limit the outdoor time to only be essential. So we've turned our garage into a gym and included some of our sandbags and ruck plates and our ruck stacks into things that the children can do as well. So, you know, they're lighter weight. They put like their books or something like their water bottle in their backpack, and they do some of this ruck PT, we call it, in the garage. So we've been putting out, you know, live videos of that on our site for free for people to do. To just what we're telling people, just keep training. You know, you don't have to go super hard every day, but you've got to do something to stay sane. And when you can and safely, you know, go around your block or stay within your neighborhood as a, you know, your family unit, or rucking with our family.
Rucking with your family. Now, you and your husband run your business together. What's that been like in the midst of this crisis?
You know, and we've been through some tough times. Parts of our business are on hold for the time being. But I have to say that, tough times can really bring out the best in people. So we see our team, you know, pitching in all different ways. You know, people that normally, handled our ruck clubs are now, out in our shipping facility picking and packing, because those things are still important to get, gear out to people so they can stay fit in their own homes. And we've seen a lot of good come out of it. We have reached out to our local police departments and are offering our boots to them, because we know that, they're literally the boots on the ground keeping us safe right now. And we want to make sure that they feel appreciated.
Oh,
yeah, there's been a lot of good that comes out of these tough times. I mean, people, we just don't know how tough we are until we're put into some of these situations.
Isn't that the truth? You never know how you'll react to something until you're in it. And I think different families are coping in different ways, aren't they? I mean, everyone has their own coping strategy.
Yes. And you've got to do what works for you and your family. And I think that's the great starting point. Take care of yourself, get enough sleep, wash your hands, eat healthy, keep some sort of fitness, activity. You don't have to create these huge goals, but you do have to maintain right now. And keeping that within yourself and your family, that's how we're going to get through this. And then when you're in a good place, you can start to look around and say, who else needs help? Do I have a elderly neighbor that needs some help with grocery deliveries? Or does someone, are they not able to walk their pet? Can I do that for them safely? So there's lots of ways that we see in our community that people can do that, but only once they've got their own situation settled.
That's right. Now, last but not least, how are you doing with the homeschooling? Because that has been a struggle in my house.
it takes a little getting used to. My philosophy is, I have kids at different ages. I have an 8-year-old in second grade who she can read and write, so that makes it a little bit easier. She's actually adapted very well to it. But my younger boys, they need a lot more outdoor time. So I'm just making sure that we're not in front of the screen too much, that I'm picking and choosing what's most valuable to them, and not trying to put too much stress on them right now. I mean, reading books, doing, exploration outside, scavenger hunts, doing science experiments, and just, letting them play and learn that way. That's my reality right now. I realize that parents of older children, it gets more stressful the older they are, and they're, trying to learn calculus.
Yeah.
Or something more difficult.
Yeah, so you haven't lived until you try to do that homework with your kids at home. Let me just say that right now.
Absolutely.
But great tips from you, Emily. She is Emily McCarthy, Chief of Staff at GoRuck here on the First Coast, as we all muddle through together. Thank you for your thoughts today, Emily. Stay safe.
Thanks, Melissa. Stay well yourself.
And that goes for everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Get those masks. Go to masksforjax.com. Help stay calm and flatten the curve as we get through this together. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.